जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य आज तो तरसतति श्रीमाद्विजवाई वैसैसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य आज तो तरसतति श्रीमाद्विजवाई वैस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य शिल प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराशिमं भागवतं हि इताई गौर प्रेमनंदी ओ ग्लोरीस टू द असेंबल डेवोटीज ओ ग्लोरीस टू द असेंबल डेवोटीज ओ ग्लोरीस टू द असेंबल डेवोटीज ओ ग्लोरीस टू शिशि गुरु एंड शिगुरंगा ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Shrimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, entitled The Summon Bonon, Chapter 7, entitled The Killing of the Demon Trinivarta, Text Number 18. एकदारोहन आरूढ़ ललाजंती सुतं सती गरिमानं शिशोर्बाधुं नसेहे गिरिकूतवत् एकादारोहम आरूढ़ ललाजंती सुतं सती गरिमानं शिशोर्बोधुं नसेहे गिरिकूतवत् एकादारोहम आरूढ़ लालजन्ति शुतं सति गरिमं नं शिशोर्बोधुं नसेहे गिरिकूतवत् प्लीज चन One time, estimated to have been when Krishna was 1 year old. Aroham, on his mother's lap. Arudham, who was sitting. Lalajanti, was patting. Sutam, her son. Sati, mother Yasoda. Garimanam, because of an increase of heaviness. Sisoho, of the child. Vodhum, to bear him. Na, not. Sehe, was able. Giri Kutabat, appearing like the weight of a mountain peak. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. One day, a year after Krishna's appearance, Mother Yasoda was patting her son on her lap. But suddenly she felt the child to be heavier than a mountain peak, and she could not longer bear his weight. Purport. Lala Janti. Sometimes mothers leave her child, and when the child falls in her hands, the child laughs, and the mother also enjoys pleasure. Yashoda used to do this, but this time Krishna became very heavy, and she could not bear his weight. Under the circumstances, it is to be understood that Krishna was aware of the coming of Trinivartasura, who will take him far away from his mother. Krishna knew that when Trinivarta came and took him away from his mother's lap, Mother Yashoda will be greatly bereaved. He did not want his mother to suffer any difficulty from the demon. Therefore, because he is the source of everything, Yamadyashijataha, he assumed the heaviness of the entire universe. The child was on the lap of Yashoda, who was therefore in possession of everything in the world. But when the child assumes such heaviness, she had to put him down in order to give Trinivartasura the opportunity to take him away and play with him for some time before the child returned to the lap of his mother. Ekadoroham arudam lala janti shutam chati garimanam shishor bodum nasehe giriku tabat. One day, a year after Krishna's appearance, Mother Yasoda was patting her son on her lap, but suddenly she felt the child to be heavier than a mountain peak, and she could no longer bear his weight. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Vikaleshma. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Tacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Bhakti Dwale Vancha Kalpa Tarubhya Sha Kripa Sindhu Vyayva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishna Bevyo Namo Namo. So the narrations of the circumstance, again, the descriptions of Krishna's pastime has this very endearing feature of helping us witness or enter into contact with his special relationship with his loving devotees, personal relationship. And at the same time, also the displays of his inconceivable powers, and also the excitement of him taking care of the demons. So this combination of Paritranaya Shadunan Vinashaya Chaduskritam is pretty amazing. It's very attractive. Without it, the knowledge or the understanding of the personality of Godhead becomes very dry and sort of not very attractive. Like, say, the conception of most religions is the conception of a very impersonal God at best. Someone who is very distant, who is sitting in a huge chair, or like a judge type of thing. When you go into a court, there's not acceptance of much of a personal relationship with the judge or a connection with the judge. You know, it's supposed to be a very neutral sort of like connection. That's the position of the judge. He have to show he is not, you know, he cannot, he's not this way or that way. So he will hear the case and he will pass his judgment. And you know, you're afraid because either the judge is gonna find out what your crime is, or possibly you may be accused of a crime that you didn't commit and being punished for something, you know, that is not, doesn't supposed to be your crime. So one have this sort of relationship that is now you cannot connect personally to this to a judge. So we see God, or other religions see God in this light. It's a universal judge, and therefore, to be able to follow religion, you follow religion out of fear of being punished. So there is this expression, Christian expression, or actually it's in general of other religions, is what is it, fear of God, like that. So fear God, fear his punishment. And therefore, when we go to other house of worships, it's also very bare. There's not much of a personal arrangement also. It feels, you know, very distant. There's no image of God. Oh, when there is an image of God, is God showing you, I'm suffering from you. So you know, if you don't, you know, so then we see Lord Jesus crucified and bloodied and being tortured, and that's the image. So it becomes, you know, not very attractive. I remember my grandmother, which was a very devout Catholic, both of my grandmothers, but especially from my father's side, she would take me, she would take the children, the grandchildren to the church, I didn't like it. I didn't relate to it. It bores me to death. Actually, I didn't like at all anything there. It's like the same feeling of going to a hospital or going to the some government of you know office or thing like that. Like, there's no connection to the people. So that is a conception of God. That is a conception of God without His personal, without having entrance to His. He is a person, and we have a relationship with Him, a loving relationship. And when it shows that aspect, that actually He's such a beautiful, kind, thoughtful personality, and we see how He interacts with such much kindness and thoughtfulness towards His devotees. It's very endearing. It's very beautiful. And every manifestation of His accepting and worshiping, He's accepting the worship and the prayers of His devotees is full of this type of kindness and love and you know, extension of Himself. When we enter a place of worship of Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu, you see how personal it is. First, the Lord is present in His deity form, which is a manifestation of His kindness and love. It's a complete manifestation of that. He accepts, He understands, is so thoughtful. He understands that we cannot see Spirit, we cannot see Him, we cannot experience God because of being covered by the bodily conception of life. There's so many layers of conceptions and misconceptions that we don't have the capacity to see. So He makes Himself available fully in a form that we can see, we can touch, we can experience. So that is the deity form of the Lord. Him fully present, willing and immediately reciprocating with the devotion of the devotees. And you see the devotees come and bring offerings to the Lord, praying directly to Him, seeing and appreciating His beautiful form that He manifests every morning, fresh. And every morning is just such a beautiful sight, just to start your day with the you know, the image of Shri Kishore Kishori, Lord Chaitanya, Shri Gorni Thai, and Sri Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra, dress so many beautiful. You remember the colors and the dress and the way they, you know, swinging like this. It's very personal. And at times you experience the deity's reciprocation. In some way, there is something that you feel that they're reciprocating. And it's not imaginary. It's a fact that we experience sometimes something that tells us that the deities is there. You have a sense. I don't know, I mean, we all have this experience that you have, you even without seeing, you sense that you sort of connecting with a person, positive or negatively. You can sense type of things. Like, you know, we call it vibe, right? So we have, you know, we vibrating in certain way with a person, and you sort of connect or disconnect accordingly. You sense it. You can sense something. The deities, I mean, I would say most of the devotees experience us with the deities. You sense that connection. That's what fuels the devotion of the devotee, is that personal touch. He's present. So the temples are filled with that personal touch. Which again, the main feature is this kindness and loving quality of the personality of Godhead. Just to emphasize that point, you know how difficult it is for a common person to have access and full access at any time of a great person, of a, you know, powerful person. Like common people like us don't have access to the, you know, great leaders of society. Like we don't have access to actually sit down with the president of the United States, you know, every morning and have, you know, some fruit or something. We don't have access, you know, to sit down with the Queen of England and just, you know, just stop by and bring, you know, a jug of milk and bring it to her and sit down with her like that. But with Krishna we do. And he is the supreme controller of the whole universe. So you can see his mood. He is there for all of us. So it's very endearing when we see Krishna here interacting with Mother Yasoda and with Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd ladies and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. It's just tremendously endearing. In this case, he knows, oh, okay, Trinivarta is coming. And he knows, I mean, Trinivarta is this, these are demons, big time demons, powerful demons. So there he comes, like Trinivarta is coming right now into the garden. He's going to make the rakas, you know, of Monday. So he knows, he comes in the form of this huge whirlwind. And it's going to cause a lot of distress. You know, just recently there was a big hurricane that was hitting the Carolinas and people were very disturbed, you know, preparing for that tragedy, and so many people die and etc. etc. So there is this demon coming to try to kill Krishna, and there is Krishna in a moment of having this loving exchange with his mother. Mother and child. Prabhupada described this Lala Yanti, which means, you know, she is playing with her child. The translation is patting her child, but Prabhupada explains you know, the process of the mother taking the child and then lifting it in the air and then catching the child, and the child having so much fun laughing. We see that with children. They love. I used to love that too. Favorite thing is, you know, being patted by your grandparents. I love to be patted by my grandfather. And it makes me laugh, and you know, he will make this anyway. He will make these sounds and make these names and things like that, and it was so fun. I still remember, even as a baby. So that moment of connection, and for the child, it's quite something, because you're so vulnerable as a child. And you know, it's a little scary sometimes when we see, you know, parents doing that, you go like, you better don't drop the child, you know? I mean, it's a little risky. You know, you throw the child in the air and you cut it. Now, you know, imagine if you're, you know, a little thing and someone is throwing you in the air and you know, you better catch me, you know? This is not fun, you know? If you miss, then I'm gonna hit the ground and it's gonna hurt, you know? So, but the child is so trusting of the parent that the child is just having a great, great time. It's just having a lot of fun in the whole thing. Because the child have this full trust on the parent's protection. So is having great fun, and the parent is having great fun to see the child having great fun. So it's a fantastic arrangement like that, they're having fun, both of them. So Mother Yasoda is doing that, and then while doing that, Krishna's enjoying like anything, Mother Yasoda is enjoying like anything, and then he got to know, oh, Trinivarta is coming. So Krishna didn't want Mother Yasoda to go to any difficulty, because Trinivarta is coming to kill him. He's not gonna mind, you know, oh, let Mother Yasoda put the child and when she then take him. No, he's a powerful demon. He just knocked down Mother Yasoda and they take Krishna. So Krishna assumed this one of his mystic potencies, Yogeshwar, the master of all mystic, and he became heavier than the heaviest. Can't remember what's the name of that city, but become heavier than the heaviest. And Mother Yasoda immediately have to put him down. I mean, it's compared here that he became as heavy. She figured it out. Oh, boy, he feels heavier than a mountain peak. But one thing, okay, it's not that one lift mountain peaks, you know. Hanuman used to do, but but nevertheless, meaning that he became so heavy, she have to put him down. With Krishna thinking, I don't want her to go to any type of difficulty with this demon. So that was his thinking. So this tells us how thoughtful Krishna is towards his devotees. And that's the endearing part. We read that in the Bhagavad Gita. How many promises? The Bhagavad Gita is filled out with promises. So many promises that Krishna gave that to the devotees, that you should always think of me in the form of Krishna and at the same time carry out your prescribed duties of fighting with your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will obtain me without doubt. For those who constantly devote to serve me with love, I give the understanding with which they can come to me. He says that he will give us whatever we lack, and he will protect whatever we have if we serve him, if we come to that position of engaging unalloyed devotion to him, and so on. So many promises are there that Krishna gives. We know the famous promise of that Lord Ramachandra gave. He says that as the Supreme Personality of God, it is my eternal principle that if any living being takes shelters of me, even once, saying, I am yours, then I award that person freedom from all fear. Even if Ravana, who kidnapped Ram's Sita, were to come here and surrender to me, I will give him all protection. Even if Ravana, Lord Ramachandra, was bringing this whole army to kill him, but if Ravana will say, I am yours, then immediately he will give him shelter. Lord Nasringadev, in one of the scriptures, is explained that Lord Nasringadev promised, anyone who prays unto me and takes shelter from me becomes my ward, and I protect him always from all sorts of calamities. That is the wonderful thing of every morning singing prayers for Lord Nasringadev. We just do it automatically, but the fact is that we're calling out. This is a promise that Lord Nasringa gave in the Nasringa Purana. Very personal. Even without being conscious, you pray and the Lord will fulfill his promise. So to receive or to be awarded the full protection of the Lord, to be awarded the full experience of the loving reciprocation of the Lord, we have to come to that position of surrender to him, seeing him as our sole source of protection. And Lord Ramachandra put it so beautiful. It's just a simple thing of saying, I'm yours. Simply like that. My dear Lord, I am yours. And then Krishna takes that for granted, take it as a fact. And then he offers his full protection. So that's the final promise of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, that if we simply see him as Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, exclusively, to have that exclusive surrender, we see it as a sole protection, then he will say, Masuchaha. You don't have to worry. I will give you protection in all situations. So according to how we surrender to the Lord, then we have that type of reciprocation. He says that in the Bhagavad Gita. According how we come to him, then he reciprocates accordingly. And a very wonderful example of this type of protection and reciprocation is the pastime of Queen Draupadi being dragged into the assembly of the Kauravas and trying to be disrobed by Duryodhana and Dushasan and Karna and all the others. So she tried to call for help to all the personalities who were present, who were supposed to be her protectors. She first called for her husbands, especially called for Arjuna and Bhima, and they couldn't protect her. And then she called for Dhritarashtra, who was at that time he was sitting in the throne as a king. He would not do anything. And then she called for Bhishma Dev. He could not do anything. And then she called for Drona and the other personalities, Kripacharya. He couldn't do anything. And then finally she tried to hold on her own, and she realized that she won't be able to do anything. And then when she raised her hands and called for Krishna, then Krishna came and gave full protection. So it took that. His Holiness Indradumya Maharaj was pointing out that in his class on Sunday, that it took, at one time she asked Lord Krishna, why you took so long, you know, to come and protect me? And then Krishna was saying, well, I was there, but it didn't look like you needed me, because you were calling, you were looking for protection in other different sources. So I was just waiting to see if you needed me. And then when you call me as your exclusive source of protection, then I came, was there immediately. So Krishna will reciprocate, will help us come to that position. Personally, taking personal care. So one may ask, well, you know, he could have helped Draupadi. But the fact is that he was helping Draupadi to actually take full exclusive protection. Is that, you know, you ever seen like parents, especially, I notice sometimes, very good parents, they allow the child to have, you know, a sense of individuality. It's not that they're all the time holding the child and doesn't allow the child to do anything on their own. But they allow the child to run, but they always, you know, like aware. They're always aware where the child is. They don't allow the child to be outside of their awareness. So immediately, if there is some danger, they're there to protect. So the child well protected, but there is a sense that the child is running around, you know, and being able to do things independently. But the parent is always aware. So similarly, Krishna is like that. He is very aware, and at all times is giving protection and allows to actually process the world, understand the reality, and helping us. It's educative. If you allow that child to have an experience of the world while protecting them from all dangers, then that's good parenting. If you don't allow the child to have an experience of the world, you know, then you have this child that is it grows like a useless kid. You can't do anything without mommy or dad. You know, you're insecure, that type of thing, because you don't allow to have experience of the world. overprotection is not good. It's not good education and parenting. You have to be allowed to experience, to come to conclusions on your own. So Krishna is perfect. He's the greatest educator. He's the greatest parental figure. So he is there, allowing Draupadi to come to that position, and then, you know, he knows he was going to protect. So that process of coming to full surrender under Krishna's watch, personal watch, is there for all of us who have decided, you are my Lord. You are my worshipable Lord. So it's a very fortunate thing, and it's very endearing. And every time we hear the narrations of the pure devotees of the Lord who are fully surrendered and how lovingly that reciprocation is, then it encourages you to go further and further. You want to be there also. You want to have that type of connection. Remember, I finish with this. One time I see my Guru Maharaj in Brooklyn. He, in the entrance of his room, he always liked images. He is very fond of pictures and images. And he will put different pictures, you know, he will collect, or devotees will always get him framed pictures. My wife used to get pictures for him, and we have god brothers, and he had disciples who were artists who were painting, so he will always have this thing. So this time he had a picture, he put a picture of Krishna. You know that picture of Krishna and Balaram running in the fields, and the cows and the cowherd boys running behind him, like having the greatest time of it, you know, life. Like, it looks so fun. So I'm walking, and there he's standing in front of that picture, just staring at that picture with this big smile. So, you know, it struck me like, Maharaj is having one of those moments. So, you know, I just stop and just appreciate him just doing that. And he look at me with his big smile and say, won't you want to be there? Won't you would like to be there? You know, playing with Krishna. So that's when we hear, when we see Krishna's pastimes, that's how much encourages to be there. So that's why Lord Krishna manifests his personal pastimes. It's for the purpose of attracting us to his loving, you know, being. Any comments or questions? Keshava Kishore Prabhu.
Thanks for the class.
Turn down a little bit the volume. Just a little bit, the main volume.
You mentioned that good parenting is leaving the kids on their own, at ease, in order for them to develop their own protection skills and their own personalities and stuff. But sometimes we as parents, we have to chastise them and let them make mistakes to our kids in order for them to learn as well. It doesn't mean that we don't love them or we're not protecting them. It's that it is necessary sometimes the chastisement in order for them to understand what is right and what is wrong. You cross the line, and in the similar way, Krishna sometimes, you know, has to use the same, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that we need to learn a lesson in a hard way, but it doesn't mean that Krishna doesn't like us or do not protect us or no, we need to learn the lesson. We need to feel that tough love oftentimes in order to for us to learn. That's all what I want to say.
Yeah, Krishna is expert on doing that, but you know, for us it may appear completely miserable, but actually is a lot of mercy. And if you have some knowledge, you have, at least you have developed a little understanding, then the devotee sees that is Krishna's mercy. It's just, it's not necessarily that Krishna is punishing you. It's just, is what the world is. This world is not a place of enjoyment. This is a place that is called Dukhalayam, a place of miseries. So just to come to turn, to realize, this is a place of miseries. Miseries, they will come. We don't, like, I think Naveen Krishna Prabhu was saying on Saturday, we don't pray for miseries. They come, regardless. So the world is designed like that. There is happiness and distress. So what Krishna is helping us to understand is that we are transcendental to happiness and distress. So it's reawakening us to reality. It's like waking up from a bad dream. So Krishna is teaching us, but he's watchful. So in general, he doesn't do or give us something that is completely going to break you. He's very good. He just gives you exactly what you need to learn. And sometimes, you know, lessons takes, you know, some time, takes certain amount of time, you know. In some of us, you know, who may have the fortune of having some decent parents, at times, you know, because, you know, naturally not perfect, just decent, but if you were raised with love, then at the end that sort of have some healing effect, but it takes, you know, you may have gone through a whole period of life that was really messy because of whatever mistakes they had to. So, you know, in my life I experienced like a whole decade of real, real difficult, messy, suffer. You know, I'm still recuperating. So, but at the end, you know, you just sort of like start to straighten up, you know, because you were given some tools or something. So that's when you're being watched or protected or raised with love. And that's what Krishna does too. Krishna does that to everybody, but when we become his devotees, then especially becomes, you know, becomes obvious. And purification allows to see that, to recognize that. So that's why we feel, you know, Krishna's mercy. So he gives us a complete different approach to life struggles. I mean, we're very lucky because even with life struggles, you have a place that you can be settled, and then, oh, Krishna's mercy, you know. So Krishna has something. Let me try to find out what Krishna's trying to teach me. And then you know, you overcome, you actually learn something. So it's fantastic. Great educator. Anyone else? Dr. Alex Prabhu.
Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Subal. Thank you for your class. I was appreciating your points on the personal aspects of God, personal features. I had one question. Just yesterday, a young man came to our temple, and he asked, what is the religion of this center? And he was asking really good questions, and he was Muslim, and thankfully Vaishnava Sevananda and I were both there to receive him, but he just came off as very intelligent and inquisitive. And but Vaishnava Sevananda, he said, he was asking us about our worship, and he said, oh, we worship Allah. He like looked him in the eyes and he said, we worship Allah. And he was like taken away by this in a good way. But sometimes I struggle with preaching to people when they ask about religion. And, you know, I know that God is one and that he is a person. But I was just wondering if you could maybe explain a little more about that, how, you know, there's Krishna and then there's Allah and how he has all of these expansions, but that, like, it seems like they're two different people, you know, like here's Krishna, but how can we explain more about how God is one and that he is
Well, in one sense, you know, because you have access to a much more intimate a more intimate aspect of the personality of Godhead, then you can appreciate also his more serious, less intimate aspect too. You know, it's the same person. So say, if you have access to, you know, this judge, if you actually are the son or the daughter of a judge, you know him outside the court, you know him in his intimate setup. So you know that he is not this cold-hearted, you know, like judge, impersonal. He is actually a very sweet person. So, you know, when you see, oh, someone is talking about the judge, you also feel automatically, you know, oh, yeah, he's such a sweet father. You know, but you may say, you know, he's such an amazing professional too. You know, you appreciate his professionalism. You know, you appreciate the way he does his job. So we can actually appreciate Krishna in his intimate setup, but also as the creator, as Lord Vishnu. You know, how he, you know, manifests all these universes. You know, and how he's a super soul. He expands into every atom and every living entity. And he's able to see everything. He's all pervading, all powerful. You know, we also appreciate and admire that. So, for someone who is worship God in awe and who have only access and appreciation and obedience to God, you know, in that type of way, then we also feel connected because, you know, we appreciate that too. So we really come to appreciate people of God. So sincere religious people, we appreciate them. So when we connect with them, we try to connect on that common ground. We're devotees of God, we're people of God, and we appreciate each other. I respect you as a people of God. And then, you know, we work on that common ground. We communicate on that common ground. But for us, we can truly appreciate, you know, Islam in that way. I don't know if you have a chance to go into a mosque and, you know, being part of their worship. I have that opportunity, you know, in one of those interreligious things, and going into, they invite me to go into their prayers, and I truly appreciated it, truly appreciated it, you know, their devout their devotion. You know, there will be someone reading from the Quran, the Iman, and then everybody line up, and then they will do all these different bow downs at times, you know, and stand up and say things together and bow down, and I think, you know, this is wonderful. So you truly, actually, you were appreciating from the perspective, oh, someone is glorifying my Lord, you know? And because you appreciate it, and they feel that. They feel that you actually appreciate in their worship. And it's not insincere, it's sincere, because we have that too. We can connect in that common ground. All right?
Hare Krishna, Subhal Prabhu. I have a comment, maybe you could expand on it if you like. Essentially the same comments I repeat every day, because I think they're one of the most important things I've learned from His Holiness Radhanatha Maharaja Prabhupada, is that you were mentioning that in your lecture that Trinivarta was like a hurricane, just like I think you mentioned a hurricane recently in Indonesia. And we see that a hurricane or tornado destroys everything in its way. And in chapter 6 of the Gita, Arjuna says, it is easier to control the wind than it is to control our mind. So we see that a tornado destroys everything in its way. So when we have this demon in ourself, this Trinivarta demon, it destroys our peace of mind or our relations, all our relationships. And one quality that destroys our relationships that I keep in mind all the time is ingratitude. So there's one lecture by His Holiness Radhanatha Maharaj. It's called Glories of Bhishma Dev. It's a three-part lecture. And on the second part of that lecture, in the beginning of that part, he mentions that sometimes we hear Prabhupada repeating the same things over again. You're not this body. Be humble. Chant your rounds. And we're like, yes, that's nice. I've heard that many times. Let me hear something new and refreshing. But he says, when you have a sense of urgency, when you're going through a sickness or an earthquake of difficulties in your life, then every word is not like, let me hear what's new and refreshing. It's you become more grateful for it when you're suffering in a suffering condition. You become grateful for Prabhupada's words, grateful for the devotees. So the lesson I learned from this is that it's not that Prabhupada's words aren't new and refreshing, it's that our gratitude isn't new and refreshing. So there's a quote that said, my last comment is, there's a quote that says, we may be at the right place, at the right time, with the right people, but if we have the wrong mentality, nothing can give us happiness. And gratitude is the wrong mentality. We can see that people who aren't ungrateful, they're not happy. On the other hand, we see the great saints, Prahlad Maharaj, Jesus Christ, Haridasa Thakur, they were crucified, beat, etc. They were at the wrong place, at the wrong time, with the wrong people. But because they had the right mentality, love, mercy, compassion, and gratitude, they were grateful for their crucifiers, because you can't test your good qualities unless you have somebody to test them. You can't be humble unless somebody tests your humility. You can't be grateful unless you give an opportunity. So these demons actually gave them the opportunity to test their gratitude. So what are some steps we can move forward to, just like Krishna killed the Trinivarta demon, what are some steps we can move forward to kill this Trinivarta demon of ingratitude within our hearts that causes disharmony between all our relationships and our own peace of mind? What's to speak of our relationships? Our own peace of mind is destroyed. So maybe you could elaborate on that.
Like there is that quote that says that Mother Earth is capable of bearing everything, but there's one thing that Mother Earth cannot bear, which is, you know, I mean, when you think of so many things, you know, but what you say, the only thing that she cannot bear, and she can tolerate so much, but she cannot tolerate an ungrateful person. So, yeah, gratitude is arguably at the top, you know, at the top of the qualities that we have to always maintain and cultivate. And it's a cultivation, because the fact that we have this sense of independence and the sense of the sense of selfishness, then that comes in between, you know, being grateful. It's a matter of purification, and we have to cultivate it. We have to, you know, there's this whole thing, encouragement, that devotees at times tell us for cultivation of this quality, that you make sure you offer your gratitude to, you know, constantly, conscientiously, offering gratitude to those who are, you know, that to the devotees and to Krishna, and to have these expressions of gratitude. And, you know, and so one, how you say, makes more expressions of gratitude and less expressions of complaint, you know? So, like that, one diminishes one and one increases the other one. It's just a conscientious practice. Because in general, we complain more than express gratitude, you know. And that's just a symptom of being self-centered. So we have to diminish our self-centeredness. And we have to put others in the center, especially Guru and Krishna in the center. So that's the whole idea. Yeah. Amanina mananina. There's a secret. You give respect and you don't expect to yourself. So, you know, when diminish our self-centeredness. And that's a big thing. Big thing. If we're able to do that, then, you know, now you're in a very elevated space. But that's what we're looking for. All right. Thank you so much, everybody. Nirantara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Jai.